This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Dudes, nobody warned us what it was going to be like when we became dads. Nobody took us aside, knuckled our heads, and whispered the secrets of being a father. It was a shock like no other the first time we were left alone with our kids. We were lost, out to sea, up to our necks in it. That is the first paragraph of our guest's today's book on the topic of becoming a father for the first time, and I'll bet many first-time dads have felt the same way. Richard Jones and Barry Robert Ozer felt so overwhelmed by the situation that they started looking around for some kind of owner's manual for new fathers and their children and came up empty-handed. So they wrote their own. The result is A Dude's Guide to Babies, The New Dad's Playbook, and Richard Jones joins us in our Spirit Square studio while his co-author, Barry Ozer, is in Naples, Florida, and joins us by phone. Welcome to both of you. Nice to have you here.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Glad to be here.
Thank you.
I bet you it's warmer in Naples than it is here this morning.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Rub it in, why don't you? We've also invited Dr. Tara Egan to be here. She is founder of Charlotte Parent Coaching. She's a doctor of psychology with a decade of experience working with parents and children. It's nice to have you in our studio as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. You have three children. Is that right, Richard?
Yes, sir.
And Barry, you have four, correct?
Four, yes.
Your children, Richard, came along in natural progression. I'm told that you, maybe I got the story backwards, one of you adopted. Is that right?
I did, yes.
Okay, yeah. And so you kind of became an instant multiple father almost overnight. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's basically what happened. And we had two in diapers at the same time. One was a baby and one was a toddler. When the baby came into our lives, I had decided, since Richard made it look so easy, that I would stay home for a few weeks and take care of the baby, and my wife would work, and that didn't work out so well for the first couple of days.
Both of your wives met in medical school. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. At the University of Florida.
So Barry's wife's a pediatrician, correct? And your wife is
obstetrician gynecologist with Mint View Women's Care.
What do they need you for? They know all about babies.
You know, you'd think so, wouldn't you?
So yours came along through natural childbirth. So
yes.
I would wager that you had an easier time of it than somebody who is suddenly gifted with a family.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just not as good at it. But what we did is we had two older kids, and then about 5 years later, we decided to try for a girl. And you would think, again, having an OBGYN as a wife, we'd easily be able to, you know, get the girl. Not really so much, no. Shows that medicine is more of an art and a science. So, but we had three boys, and then we moved up here, and suddenly I was all by myself. And the two older ones were heading off to school, and I was stuck with a one-month-old baby who I had never been sole charge of yet. So it was it was a shock because my wife had been in and out or in medical school or taking some time off, and she'd had raised the older ones when they were babies.
So it was shortly thereafter, I take it, Barry, that you decided that following Richard's example that you would adopt some children, and there you were as a stay-at-home dad as well?
Well, yeah, basically I figured I wanted to do one better than Richard. And, you know, Richard and my wife and Richard's wife made things look easy. Mm-hmm. And I figured, you know, heck, I could work from home. I had a job at IBM, which allowed me to stay at home. And I figured work at home, do everything I wanted to do, hang out with my buddies at the coffee shop. I just have a little baby with me. And what I didn't realize, and, you know, Richard eventually knuckled me on the head about was, look, you got to spend 100% of your energy focusing on the baby. And once you embrace that, and once Richard helped me understand that, you know, life got a lot easier. But the first couple of days, I got to tell you, I was a train wreck.
There's an article in the paper this morning, Doctor, that deals with the census data has revealed that something close to 20%, it could be 23% of men are stay-at-home dads now. That sounds like an awfully high figure, but it's true, at least according to the census data. Are you finding that this is an unusual situation, or is it becoming more of the norm?
I do think it's becoming more of the norm. I mean, I have two young children myself. I have a 7.5-year-old and a 5.5-year-old. And in the neighborhood I've lived in the last 5-6 years, there's several dads. I think where it can be difficult is sometimes dads are called stay-at-home dads when it really means they work-at-home dads, and they have the dual role.
But isn't that what moms have always been?
Well, that is very true. And sometimes moms who are at home have the privilege of having their sole job be caring for the children, and sometimes they're doing two jobs where they're working for a company and doing that out of the home at the same time that they're raising children.
But caring for the children, doing the laundry, keeping the house clean, cooking the meals, planning the menu, doing the grocery shopping, that's what moms have always done since I can remember. That seems like more than a full-time job to me.
Absolutely. I mean, as any mother will attest, or father who stays at home, it's the most underpaid.
But then women seem adept at it and men don't. Men seem at a loss in the home, at least because of traditional role models, at least. Maybe not so much anymore. Are you finding that to be the case?
I do think that men are showing a lot more competence in that area. I think some of it is the perception, their self-perception, as well as their wives and the people in society. They treat men sometimes as though they can't do it. Mm-hmm. And when they're given a chance to prove it, often they rise to the occasion and do a fantastic job.
It's like I took a management class once and they said, if you want to be a manager, never learn how to use the typewriter. This is a long time ago. Never learn how to type. Never learn how to use the copying machine, because that's what you have a secretary for. When you know how to do those things, you weaken yourselves. So maybe men have never wanted to wash the dishes or clean the house because they could do it, but if they did it, then, my God, they'd become domestics.
Mm-hmm.
Whose idea was the book?
That was Barry's. After he had started taking care of his daughter, I went and saw him about 2 or 3 days into it, and he was a complete and total mess. I mean, he's normally very well-dressed, looking sharp, a lot sharper than I am. But he was wearing sweatpants that had stains on there from places I really didn't even want to contemplate. And so I took the baby, I get fed her, burped her, put her back down, said, Barry, go shower, come back in a little bit. And so when he came back, we started talking. And at one point, Barry said that he was looking for the owner's manual or a guide to babies, how to do this. I said, dude, there is no guide for babies, honestly. And he eventually that stuck with him. And after a couple of years, we both poked our heads up enough to realize that the world was still there. It wasn't us just taking care of the kids. And Barry thought, well, you know, we really ought to write that book. And so we got together and did it.
Well, when we say we, I mean, Richard's the writer. I'm the idea guy. And so it was more of a collaboration on my end. Richard really did a wonderful job getting everything together.
Thank you.
But I got to tell you, it was a perfect union of two University of Florida grads getting together and doing something great.
Actually, at some place you say you did look around for baby guides, mm-hmm. and you found some that put you to sleep by the third paragraph.
Pretty much.
Bored you senseless. They were too long. You wanted something that was short and punchy and mm-hmm. practical.
Yeah.
Your book is 208 pages.
Yep.
That is not short.
Have you ever seen What to Expect When You're Expecting, or What to Expect in the First Year? That's 3 or 4 times the size, and it's very tiny text. I mean, literally, you can open up a page and you'll look at it and you'll think you're back in the heyday of the New York Times in the 50s when all you had was column after column of gray text.
So the problem here is that guys don't read the owner's manual to anything. I mean, if you get a new car, you got this 900-page owner's manual that's so thick it sits in the trunk now,
mm-hmm.
and you never, ever open it.
Right.
So why would you open a guide's book to baby, a dad's guide's book to babies?
Go ahead, Barry.
Excuse me. The way we wrote it, and we have a very comprehensive table of contents, is so that, number one, you can kind of go to a section and glean and read that section. Intermixed in the section are, you know, great stories, information, checklists, and what we call pops quizzes. So it's not 208 pages of, you know, single type font.
Or go do this, and then you got to do that, and then after that you got to do the other thing. And it's not all directions. We our biggest thing is we wanted to make sure that if they read this, they would get a laugh, and hopefully when they laugh, they would remember.
Mm-hmm. And in your practice, when you deal with adults, what do you deal with them? What are the issues that they come to see you about? Because you're a psychologist,
right? My background is in school psychology, so I've always worked in a manner that intermingles the education mm-hmm. of the child with what's happening at home.
Okay.
And I, as far to comment on what Richard was saying, as far as how much information is out there, but yet at the same time it's almost unreadable because it's hard to decipher and it's very wordy. I think that with dads is they have to be in the moment and experiencing and have that sense of panic, and then they're going to go find some answers. Mm. And I think a lot of women will take the time during their pregnancy to do a lot of reading. So by the time they bring baby home, mom has an idea of, okay, well, here's some developmental milestones to look for. Maybe they've done a little bit of research on which pediatrician to use. They have at least a glimmer of ideas about, well, what happens with nursing, or if you choose to use formula, or what kind of complications that you can have. Whereas I think men are like, well, they're babies. They eat, sleep, and poop, and we just carry them around and hope they don't cry. Mm-hmm. And then if something happens that's unexpected, that's when they're going to go looking for answers.
Now, the women do all the research and the preparation during the 9 months because they're very aware that in 9 months there's going to be a human being involved because they're carrying that child. Mm-hmm. Or are they doing that because they have been prepped since they were little girls for this? Because little girls play with dolls. Little boys don't, unless they're G.I. Joes. Usually, and little girls nurture these dolls. Little G.I. Joe gets to fight battles. He gets to punch things and break things. So is that the difference?
I think so. I think some of it is that women have a little bit more pressure on them to succeed as a parent. I think that sometimes when we're, you know, you look at the dad who's out in public and he's got his two-year-old and they're in the shopping cart and she's wearing a princess dress and her face is smeared with chocolate and she obviously hasn't had her hair combed that day. And then you look at mom, and if mom were to be in that same scenario, she might be looked upon with disapproval of, can't you get your act together and get your kid dressed appropriately? And so I think that women, once they start their pregnancy and they hear all the information about what to eat and what to do and how to sleep and how to exercise, there's a pressure there, and they want to get informed so that they can walk into it feeling successful.
Is there still that double standard from your experience, Barry and Richard, that if your wife takes mm-hmm. an infant out and the infant's got spit up all over its clothes, or it looks disheveled, or the booties don't match because you had to get out of the house quickly, right, that she doesn't get a pass, whereas you would get a pass? Not only would you get a pass, but you would get looks in the grocery store from people going, look at that poor man having to take care of this child.
Yeah, there is a lot of what I call the tyranny of low expectations, in that I always tried to work harder because people expected so little. Because they saw me as a dad, and they immediately assumed that I was A, an idiot, B, barely holding on, or you know, C, wishing nothing more than to have my wife come home and relieve me of this burden, mm-hmm. when that was this farthest from the truth. But I had to try and make sure that he always had the right booties on, or that he wasn't at least too messy. The hair, I didn't really have to worry about. Having none myself, everybody gives me a pass on everybody having bad hair. But literally, I see that all the time. And when, say, I was with other men, they would always keep a healthy, respectful distance because they didn't want to catch this whole fatherhood thing.
And they didn't want to hear about it.
Exactly, yeah.
I want to get Barry's perspective on this in a second. We have to take a break. Richard Jones and Barry Ozer are the co-authors of A Dude's Guide to Babies, The New Dad's Playbook. And Dr. Tara Egan is a doctor of psychology and the founder of Charlotte Parent Coaching. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Graduate School at UNC Charlotte, offering more than 100 graduate programs in fields like business, health, education, and engineering. Information at evenhighereducation.uncc.edu. Across the country, hospitals are facing shortages of critical drugs, drugs that can mean the difference between life and death. Last week, WFAE's Michael Tomczyk reported in a series on this terrible situation, and he's going to join us tomorrow morning at 9 along with several experts on the topic to recap where we are, how we got here, and what, if anything, is being done to correct this chronic problem. That's tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments on two cases that address same-sex marriage, the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, and California's Proposition 8.
As always, you're invited to join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning right after Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Richard Jones and Barry Ozer got together and wrote A Dude's Guide to Babies, the New Dad's Playbook. Richard is a freelance writer. Barry is a financial advisor, but they both found themselves with young children, and they were in charge of taking care of them for a good part of the day. And so after looking around for an owner's manual and not being able to find one, they wrote their own. Dr. Tara Egan is a doctor of psychology and founder of Charlotte Parent Coaching. Barry, we were just talking about different expectations for moms and dads when it comes to children, particularly in public. And yet this whole book came about because Richard came over to your house and you were a wreck because you had an infant child and you felt like you couldn't take your eyes off of her for a nanosecond. Were you an overachiever? Were you just trying too hard?
Well, in my case, Mike, I was just trying to do too much. You know, I figured I could do my work and hang out with my friends and just, you know, have my daughter along in tow. And, you know, once Richard knuckled me on the head and sat me down and said, look, you know, you can't do all those things. And I think that the level of expectations are different. I think that as a working professional, you know, I'm used to being distracted and doing 20 things at a time with, you know, texting and emailing and TV and the like. And I had to reset, you know, what my expectations were of myself, which turned out to be, you know, 100% of my energy needed to be focused on, you know, protecting and taking care of my baby.
Wow. The book is called A Dude's Guide to Babies. Is dude a word a father can use to identify himself, or does it have to become dad?
Well, you really have to own it. But my kids always look at me these days and they're like, you know, you don't have to keep saying that. It's like, yeah, you know, it's just Barry and I got in the habit of calling each other that. We've known each other for a long time.
Yeah. Dude.
And yeah, exactly. And so we just started calling it that. And when it came time to write the book, Barry, they thought, you know, hey, why not?
And I guess it is for – you're aiming this at what? New fathers, people
sure.
with very little experience in this arena. And dude, the word dude, at least to me, connotes a kind of a free,
yeah.
almost a single lifestyle. And even when you're a newlywed, you still have a lot of freedom, a lot of
sure.
time to explore your own life and go out with the guys and watch lots of football and do stuff that guys do. And then suddenly this little baby arrives and the paradigm – shifts, and you're no longer necessarily free.
Well, you're free to you're still free
things.
To explore your own life. It's just a different aspect of your life.
But isn't this a big, 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 big adjustment?
Oh,
for,
yes.
For guys, more so than women?
Well, I'm not sure. I think possibly for the traditional roles. I mean, admit it, when I grew up, I was playing football, basketball, any kind of sport, running around. I just never considered that I needed to also be learning how to change a diaper. I always thought that learning how to carry a football would pretty much carry me through anything. Turns out, no.
But you carry a baby like a football, don't you?
Well, yeah. You know, you got to strike the Heisman pose. You just got to, you know, keep him in one arm. But yeah, it's perhaps we don't really get the preparation that we need growing up. But these days, it's so much more available. I mean, it's a lot less of something that'll cause you to be a pariah if you stay at home with your dad with your kids
mm-hmm.
as a dad. And when I was first starting, this was more than a decade ago. When I would wander around, I would get so many strange looks. Like, why is this person walking around with a child? And is he divorced? Is he somebody who's only got the kid on the weekend?
Did he steal it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, should we call the police? You know, I hated taking them out on the weekends because people always assumed that I was a divorced dad who only had them on the weekends.
Right.
And you know, so it's all over.
Do you want to jump in there, Barry?
Yeah, here's the deal. When you become a father, the book is not targeted just for the stay-at-home dad, but mm-hmm. at points in your life, you're going to want to spend time alone with your baby. You're going to want to give your wife or significant other a break. You're going to want to spend time bonding with your baby. And so, you know, those times, the 2 hours or a Saturday or a Sunday or whatever time that you have with your baby, you want that to be pleasant experience. And I got to tell you, for the first day and a half, I panicked. I really did. And I, again, I thought it would be easy. And so when we sat down to write A Dude's Guide to Babies, we wanted something that would give you the basics, the playbook, so that you could understand, you know, number one, safety, your number one priority. Number two, cleaning and feeding. And number three, bonding, right? So you wanted to, we wanted to have something that somebody who maybe wasn't a stay-at-home dad but had limited time with their baby so that they could, you know, understand those key things. And then your relationship with your wife, your significant other, your baby, your other children would improve. And that's what I think we got. Mm.
Dr. Spock, I guess, set the standard for this back in the 1950s or late 40s when he wrote his book. I know that sat on my parents' night table forever, never moved. I don't know if it was ever open, but it was always there. But it seems like human beings have been having children for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, long before books came along. How did we do it without guides?
Some would say it's instinctual, and I think that there's a...
Then why do we need them?
Well, I'm sorry to jump in here, but physically, so sure, we know how to
sell
make
his
them.
Book now.
No, physically, we know how to make them. Not a problem. We practice at that a lot. Physically, we can. The women are able to bear the children. It's just that the way that we are there to rear them has changed over the years. Think about back in the 50s, going out in public and swatting your kid on the bottom or on the leg or whatever. Fine, no problem. You know, these days,
child abuse.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's our cultural expectations have changed over the years. And for men who might have grown up without the constant reassurance of, yes, I've got the doll here, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I know I'm nurturing. If they grow up without that approval, then they don't possibly know what is expected of them. Mm-hmm. You know, when they have the kid.
One of the other things that's happened is, you know, the roles are starting to change, as Dr. Egan mentioned earlier. More and more dads are more and more involved in their children's lives. Frankly, you know, people are living longer, having children later in life. Roles in the household are reversing. I mean, just look at Richard and myself. We both married, you know, doctors. So for us, in today's society, men are more and more involved in, you know, the baby years, so to speak.
But without the training or the preparation.
I have to admit, I disagree a little bit on the idea that women or girls go through their childhood being prepared to do concrete tasks like changing diapers and knowing exactly what to do to how to nurse or to get them to sleep. I mean, I think that women, once they've carried the child for 9 months, they can feel the baby moving. They have to be in tune with their bodies, and then the baby's born. And there's no choice to it.
Right.
I mean, there isn't. You need to figure out what you're going to do to feed the baby and to take care of it. And there's pretty high expectations, and you get lots of advice that's welcome or not welcome. But I do think there's a certain element of caretaking for children that is instinctual, both for men and women. Mm. But I think that we just jump in and we try things. And the one good thing about babies is they can't tell on you. So if you put their diaper on the wrong way or feed them something they hate, or, you know, most of the time it's just a moment you have with your baby that stays between you and the baby. And
do first-time parents, be they men or women, overreact to all the things that the baby is going through and feel like they're doing something wrong and they can't take their eye off this child because something horrible will happen if they're not watching?
And I do believe that that's true. I think it's true for probably men and women, but I know there's a lot of research that talks about the postpartum impact.
So how should you approach it? I mean, you don't want to be negligent, but on the other hand, you don't want to be what like Barry was when Richard came over to see him, an absolute wreck, evidently, because he couldn't rest a nanosecond.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that some of it is and I think women try to do this with all their reading, is to be organized and to know what to expect. And even if you can't necessarily set your emotions aside, mm-hmm. to and say, okay, this is going to be okay. This is just a moment in time. because it is the stage that they're in when they're babies. It's a stage, and you get through it, and you move on to the next stage that comes with its own new set of problems.
Is there any resentment on the part of men who, by God, we did not train for this? This is not what I trained for.
With me, a little at first. I mean, I had never – when I was growing up in high school, I was voted least likely to conceive. I think that was more about my looks personally. But but the thing is, I never really expected to stay at home and take care of the guys. Yeah. And I did. But it was one of those things where I think I was thrown into the deep end and had to learn how to swim. So I still on occasion felt a little bit like, gee, you can't really ask this of me. I've never done this before. I don't know. But it's one of those things where you either have to, pardon the expression, man up or get out.
I don't know which one of you, Barry or Richard, is responsible for this phrase, but you say that the life adjustment for men actually begins when you learn that your wife is pregnant, a moment one of you describes as an axe handle to the back of the head.
That's
a pretty strong reaction.
I wonder who might have said that one. For me, definitely, and that's what a lot of this book is basically it's what Barry and I did, not necessarily what is recommended for everybody, but we did it, our kids lived, and seem to be doing pretty well. But to me, I know that I spent a significant portion of my pre-parent life desperately hoping that no one was pregnant. And so once we did, then I realized – whoa, A, this is on purpose, and B, wow, somebody's going to trust me with a kid?
So I take it that's your phrase because you're the writer in the group. Is that your phrase? You're going to own it? Own it?
Yes,
okay.
I own it.
So, Barry, would you agree with that, or is that an over-dramatization of the reaction?
Well, my situation was so unique, and I just kind of – again, I thought, bringing children into this world, that was the easy part. It's getting them through the next, 20-something years of their lives, which I think is much more difficult. And so, my take is that I kind of got shocked into this a couple of weeks after the event happened. And I probably had the same feeling that Richard had when he found out he was pregnant. It was in a different way.
He brings up an interesting point that I'd like you to address, Doctor, because you deal with parents and children who are in school, and as difficult as an adjustment as it may be to bring a new life into the world and take care of that child when they're absolutely helpless without you, as difficult as that is, they gradually become entities unto themselves. They learn the word no. They have minds of their own, and eventually they become teenagers, which is the more difficult stage for parents to be concerned about.
Well, I think that for a lot of parents, the big shocker is kindergarten, because that is such a change from having the child be, even if they're in a preschool program or daycare program or something, but to have them, you sort of feel like they're all yours. And then when they go to kindergarten and they're supposed to spend 7 hours with somebody else.
It's like sending them to college.
Maybe a little bit. I haven't sent any children to college, but I think I might get a little emotional if we keep talking about that, because kindergarten was a big transition. And, that's really the moment where they step away from you and you don't know what they're doing all day. And they come home with stories about people you don't even know, other children or teachers. And I think that's a big shock. And then when they go into the teenage years and maybe they have a best friend and you don't know that parent as well as you used to know the parents of your children's friends when they were younger, and they start having experiences that you can't necessarily relate to because it's a different generation, it's a different time.
And it's about loosening the leash.
It is.
And it begins, you write about it in the book, loosening the leash, letting the baby sleep, letting the baby alone for a while. You can't always cling to it. And that's the tough part.
That's a huge part of parenting. That's one of the most important parts, is teaching kids to be independent and problem solve and make good decisions without you, to take the information and everything that you've taught, the lessons and the things that you've role modeled, and be able to use it in the way that's most effective for them.
Well, you talk about, I think it's you, Barry, that you talk about syncing your time to the baby's time. Explain that.
Well, what happened was, what you know, the babies have sort of a cycle, and every baby's cycle is a little bit different, but, you know, it's usually something along the lines of waking up, then changing a diaper, then feeding, then, you know, maybe playing a little bit, and then, you know, changing a diaper again, and then taking a nap, right? And so once you realize that that sort of cycle works, and you should get into that cycle. In other words, if the baby's taking a nap and you're a little bit tired, why don't you take a nap then instead of, you know, downing five cups of coffee and trying to get everything done? And so getting into that cycle, and again, every baby is probably different, but once you start, sort of synchronize your life around your baby's life, I think things go much
better. You don't want to try to play with the baby when it's nap time.
Yeah.
You know, because he will not be appreciative. And you don't want to try to – if he's not hungry, you don't want to try to feed him.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's what Barry's talking about.
What was the biggest challenge both of you faced? I'd like to hear from both of you individually on what was the biggest challenge you faced the first time around?
For me, the biggest challenge was actually once I realized that this was actual, real, and something that was really occurring was trying to put him down. Because I was happy to hand him off to let my wife take care of him, or let my wife hold him, or let some of the family hold him and cuddle him. But putting him down and walking away and trying to let that leash a little bit looser, it was difficult.
Why? You're just putting him in his bed, his bassinet.
He's so small, you know. And with our first kid, to me, people have babies all the time. But he was mine, and he was a miracle. I mean, I held him, and he looked like I did when I was that age. I've seen pictures, and it's frightening how much our oldest son, Sarcasmo, how much he looks like me. and I putting him down, he was so, he meant so much.
Yeah.
And just to put him down and leave him there and step back, it was difficult to learn to separate myself at first.
What about you, Barry?
The most difficult thing for me, frankly, was letting go of everything else, in the sense that, I tried to do everything I was doing and just add the baby. And, you know, I even called the golf course where I'm a member and said, could I put a baby in the golf cart, you know, and play a few holes? And they're like, we think maybe you could, but are you sure that's a good idea? And so once I came to the realization that my world had changed for the better, and that 100% of my energy and focus and attention needed to revolve around my babies, I was a much better person and a better father, and I was happier. And, you know, I get a little bit emotional thinking about that epiphany I had.
Is it a matter of adding or adding and subtracting? In terms of when a baby arrives, you can't just add it to your life. You've got to, something has to go. Is that? Would you say that's true?
I would say so. I think it's reprioritizing everything and realizing that parenthood is relentless in a lot of ways. It's fantastic, but it's relentless. And you have to understand that this is your life now.
We have to take a break. We're going to come back in more with more and talk about more specifically about the Dude's Guide to Babies in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Invisible Fence Brand, committed to keeping pets safe at home with customized pet protection solutions now for any sized property, from zero lot lines to large acreage. Details at InvisibleFence.com. The U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments on two cases that address same-sex marriage, the constitutionality of the Defense of Marriage Act, and California's Proposition 8. Both of those things will be talked about in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to join our conversation about fathers and babies, and specifically a dude's guide to babies, now's your chance. 704-926-WFAE, that's 704-926-9323, 800-603-WFAE, or put the pacifier down and go to the computer, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
I knew that when I finally had to say goodbye to Killian, it would be tough because he was such a huge part of my life. I had to schedule the time for him to be picked up as a time that I wasn't there because I would just lose it. It was just great to know that he was making radio now. He wasn't just sitting in my driveway.
My name is Jessica Frazier. I donated my 1994 Chevy Lumina to public radio.
Learn more at WFAE.org, and thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guests today have written a book, A Dude's Guide to Babies, The New Dad's Playbook. Which one of you is on the cover?
Me.
Me. Richard Jones and Barry Robert Ozer. They'll be signing their book on April the 7th at Park Road Books at 2 p.m. They join us along with Dr. Tara Egan, doctor of psychology and founder of Charlotte Parent Coaching. Talked about Dr. Spock's book being around when my parents were having their children for the first time. And you looked around and couldn't find any parenting manuals that you thought were suitable or worked for you. And you wanted to completely change the way men and women look at parenting. You say that that it was possible for men to be involved in the raising of their children without too much collateral damage. Is that an example of the humor to be found in this book, or are you serious?
No. We sometimes have a grandiose little impression of ourselves, but we're not that bad. We just wanted to basically say if we can do this, then anybody can do it. I mean, I like to think of us as doofy, the plural of doofus, on occasion. But there's no gallant between the two of us. It's just gallant and doof. It's just the doofy.
You say that there are three basics that every dad needs to take care of. Those three basics are?
Barry?
Well, basically safety, making sure that your baby is safe, feeding, making sure that your baby is fed properly, and clean. And making sure that your baby's clean. And by that
you mean clothing, not just bathing.
That's
what the book says. The book says, Barry, the book says safety, food and drink, and clothing. Now, let's not go off the script here.
Yeah.
They'll be adding a fourth in here.
No. We tend to oversimplify things, but if you get the basics of the playbook down, and they all sort of revolve around that.
Well, I was going to ask if it's three, or in this case four, basic things that you need, do you need a playbook for this?
Well, sure, because the thing is it's like there are so many permutations, so many different things that can go wrong or right when you're trying to raise a child. You can't sit down and say, this will work for every single child. Mm-hmm. This will work for that. Do this. You can't write a manual for kids that say, insert tab A into slot B, and you'll get result C. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. So what we try to do is say, these are the things, these are the goals that you need to look for. Once you've got these, the rest is gravy.
Do you agree with that? That the three basic things are safety, food and drink, and clothing, keeping the kids clean?
I think that's really important. Earlier in the conversation, Barry mentioned that the idea of the bonding is sometimes when you take away some of the physical needs, you get those addressed with with the safety and taking care of its physical needs. Then it frees you up to be more emotionally available and engaged with your baby, and that's so important. As far as reaching their developmental milestones and being able to move on to the next stage in their childhood.
Let's bring some folks into the conversation, and we'll begin with Lila in Charlotte. Lila, welcome to the program.
Oh, good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Go ahead.
I just had a comment. I just got a great chuckle out of the gentleman who tried to put his baby, or thought he might want to take the baby to the golf course.
Yeah, that's Barry.
Well, Barry, the first thing I realized, I worked full time, and actually was supposed to be at work the day the baby came a few days early. So I called and said I'm on leave from the maternity room. But anyway, I thought I had 3 months to catch up on all sorts of household chores. Well, the first thing I gave up was my compost pile. No more organic gardening. But I still thought I had 3 months to catch up on some kind of project. And in 90 days, I managed to refinish one little tiny piece of furniture. When I went back to work, there was a daycare at the hospital I worked at. And that was very, very convenient. I could walk over any time. And I think I spent more time there the first day leaving him than I did on my job. So it's loosening the leash. It's a continuing process. And he's 14 years old right now, and the leash is getting pretty long.
But no easier, I would think.
Actually, it turned out to be a terrific kid. It's different. Each phase is different. You just have to roll with it and keep an open mind and keep the communication open.
Lila, thank you for your call. Let me go to Brad in Charlotte. Brad, you're on WFAE. Welcome.
Hi. I am also a stay-at-home dad. I'm actually burping my four-month-old right now.
Thought I heard that in the background.
And so I just wanted to notice or ask the guys if they also noticed that when they first started doing this, as I first started doing this now, if they noticed their life just kind of flew by. Like, I just now, I don't know, it seems like the other day I just realized, oh, God, it's March, you know?
Well, oddly enough, that doesn't actually stop once you get used to having the kids. It, your attention turns to them, their calendar becomes your calendar. But fortunately, when you get a little bit older, they start going to school, and then you realize, oh, wait, summer's coming. And then you can try to keep track that way.
Yeah.
But
something to look forward to.
Is this the first time, Brad? Is this the first child?
Yes, it is. It's my first.
And are you? How are you adjusting?
I'll be honest with you. It was a big adjustment. I went from doing tree work and very physical outdoor type mm-hmm. of work environment to we just had to make some financial calls between my wife and I, and she made more money, so obviously she stayed at work and I went home or stayed at home. And so that's been weird.
I'm going to go back to the article in the paper this morning, Brad, mm-hmm. which talked about this. The census reports, the latest census reports, that there are more stay-at-home dads than ever before because, in large part, women are making more money than men because women are better educated than men, or men prefer to work with their hands, as you did, outdoors, doing labor, and women want to be in the office behind a desk, which requires more education, which gets them more money. So the guys end up staying home as stay-at-home dads because the higher income wins out.
That's basically what it boiled down to for us. I am the kind of person that just loathes a desk in an office environment, and she just wanted, you know, had went with that career route, and I went with mine, and then economics it.
Well, good luck.
What they are.
Good luck to you. I see a great looking treehouse in your child's future. Good luck, Brad.
Dude, you got this. Thanks, Brad.
Thanks a lot.
Bye, Brad. The book is not all, although it's lighthearted mm-hmm. and it's meant to be punchy and comedic right. in places. It's not all fun and games.
Right.
You go into a lot of serious things. Like there are the top 10 questions to ask prospective doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also have the top 10 questions every dude should ask the doc. What's the difference between those two lists of questions? Because they're two lists.
Mm-hmm. Barry?
Well, Richard, I mean, help me out here. I don't have the book.
You don't remember it.
Right, no. Well, the difference is that, one, we're trying to find out about how the doctor's office functions. Do they take your insurance? If you have a question in the middle of the night, who do you call? Is there a doctor on call? Do you get along with the office staff? All of these things, how they set up their waiting room, those are all things that you need to find out from prospective doctors. And then there are other questions that you, as someone who might not have been all that up on the developmental stages or the milestones or things like that for your child, you might want to get involved with. Like, for instance, you know, what is this crusty thing and why did it fall off my son?
Mm-hmm.
It's the umbilical cord, which was a shock to me when I first saw that thing because it stayed there. And I kept thinking, you know, where's his belly button? And eventually my wife, dope slapped at the back of the head and said, you know, that is the belly button. It just hadn't fallen off yet. And then it fell off and there was this little crusty thing that she insisted on saving. And I had no idea what it was. And so we wanted to make sure that, you know, when you see these things that are unusual or things that aren't around on an adult human being.
Yeah, speaking of things that are unusual, you go into great – yeah, go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
I got to tell you a great story about my umbilical cord. Ours eventually came off, right? And so I wanted to save it for my wife so she could see it when she got home from her day at the office. And, you know, we had the dog.
Oh,
and I put it in a cup on the counter, and this is the only time the dog ever got up on the counter. I got to tell you, it was quite the story.
I don't even want to hear it.
Yeah, exactly. I think we've heard
I think
enough.
We know.
You go into great detail about things that I never even thought about, particularly when it comes to the contents of diapers.
Mm-hmm.
And diaper changing. I guess other books go into that, do they? I mean, I have not been exposed to that, and mm-hmm. I must say I learned things that I never thought I'd want to know.
I guess you got
to know these things,
yeah.
right? Because
yeah.
the first time it's a shock.
I mean, you can learn a lot by what comes, not only what by what goes in, but what comes out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for like the meconium, I had no idea what that was.
Explain
and
what that is. A lot of people don't know what that is.
When the baby is in the uterus for up to nine months or whatever, then he or she swallows some of the amniotic fluid, things, you know, just life progresses. And eventually she has to expel it. And it comes out in the diaper as this thick, black, tarry mess that basically frightened me. I haven't been too frightened when I've opened a diaper, but that one did.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted you to know when you're reading the book, when this comes out, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, your daughter doesn't have to be rushed to the hospital. Your son is just fine.
This book is aimed at men, although women can certainly,
certainly
benefit from this. But how would you characterize most books on parenting and the various stages of parenting, Doctor? Are they aimed mostly at women? Are they aimed at both parents? Are they aimed at men? Are they valuable? Are they difficult to read and understand and digest and use?
I think that a lot of times they're aimed towards the mothers versus the fathers. I do think that the newer information out there is targeted towards both, because I think there's an acknowledgement that fathers are trying to be invested in the pregnancy and understand what's happening to their wife's body. And I think that there's some really good resources out there. Some of it just depends on whether or not you're a reader. In my practice, when I'm working with families, sometimes parents will come to me about a concern. And they'll say, I don't want to read about it. I just want somebody to tell me mm-hmm. and help me and show me. And
I
so,
feel the DVD series coming on.
And I think that sometimes it's just if you're not a reader, if you don't feel like you have time, then it doesn't matter how simple the book is. It just seems unapproachable. And I saw something on the internet about your book, Richard and Barry, that said, you know, you want it to be a book that you could read on the can.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of dads and moms, I'm sure, can relate to that. It's something quick, a guide, just a little tool you can have in the moment. And I think a lot of parent resources aren't like that.
Is this a book designed to read in the 9 months leading up to the birth, or is it a book that you can grab after the fact because you didn't do your homework in the first place?
Well,
a little bit of both.
Yeah.
A little bit of both.
I was going to say, we're not trying to sell this too hard, are we? Yeah, we have some parts in there about pregnancy, mm-hmm. About childbirth, just a little bit here and there, some just to help prepare dads who are getting ready to go through it, mm-hmm. Getting ready for the childbirth. But mostly what the book focuses on is after coming home. So if dads want to be prepared, mm-hmm. great. You know, they can read a little bit here. If not, they can always read a short little bit while they're
Some women experience postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. It can be pretty serious in some cases. But I'm told that men also can suffer from being depressed after a baby's birth, but not for the same reasons. It's not the same thing. For men, it's the sudden realization that life has changed. Has that?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
That was your, was, you know, was listen, that your experience? Go ahead, Barry.
You know, in any endeavor you take and as your life progresses, you're going to face change at some point. And you have a couple of choices, right? You could ignore change and just let life and things pass you by and, you know, move on. Or you can fight it and become, you know, bitter. Or you can accept it and try and, you know, for lack of a better term, capitalize on it. And once you accept that your life is going to be different and better, everybody in your life is going to notice that.
You want to chime in on that?
Oh, well, I just think that defining yourself differently, having a new part of your identity emerge, and understanding, you know, you might have had a role before of husband and son and coworker, and now all of a sudden you add fatherhood to it, and it's such a huge portion of your mind and your heart is taken up. And to identify and change your identity in that area and and understand how fundamentally different you now are, I think is a huge adjustment for men.
Let me go very quickly to David in Rock Hill. Very short on time. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I wanted to make two quick observations. One is I had my first son 31 years ago, and the realization when it hit me like the axe handle to the back of the head was I was watching a commercial on television about hungry children and around the world, and noticed that tears were streaming down my face as I realized that I had a child, and except for the grace of God, there go I. The second observation is I just had my first grandchild 2 weeks ago.
Congratulations.
And I noticed that my son is 31 years old, and I was 23 years old. And I look at the worry on his face at 31. He's got, you know, eight more years of worrying and life and things of that nature. And at 23, I didn't know any better. You know, I just kind of took it and ran with it as quickly as I could, and didn't have the kind of stress of worrying about what was going to happen in life. I just kind of adapted. And I think that may be some of the changes that have occurred now, is that we're having children later in life, and we know of more things that can go wrong.
And with that, I have to let you go because we're completely out of time. The book is called A Dude's Guide to Babies, The New Dad's Playbook. It's by Richard Jones and Barry Ozer, who both were with us. And Dr. Tara Egan is a doctor of psychology and founder of Charlotte Parent Coaching. Thank you all for the hour.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Had a good time.